The House will come to order. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo.
Here.
Berger.
Here.
Blake.
Here.
Blickrey.
Here.
Bonner.
Here.
Botten.
Here.
Brechtel.
Here.
Brown.
Here.
Burkhart.
Here.
Bird. Bird.
Here.
Campbell.
Here.
Kennedy.
Here.
Childers.
Here.
Connolly.
Here.
Kraft.
Here.
Davison excused. Edmonds.
Here.
Eklund. Esquivel,
here.
Freeman,
here.
Gay excused, Gingery,
here.
Goggles,
here.
Greer,
here.
Green,
here.
Harshman,
here.
Harvey,
here.
Hunt,
here.
Illaway,
here.
Yagi,
here.
Kasparik,
here.
Croker,
here.
Crone,
here.
Lockhart,
here.
Laux,
here.
Lubno,
here.
Madden,
here.
McKim,
here.
McComey, McComey, Miller, Moniz,
here.
Nicholas,
here.
Patton,
here.
Peasley,
here.
Pedersen,
here.
Peterson,
here.
Petroff,
here.
Korberg,
here.
Roscoe,
here.
Simlick,
here.
Shepperson excused, Stewart,
here.
Stubson,
here.
Teeters,
here.
Throne,
here.
Braunisch,
here.
Wallace,
here.
Swanitzer Dan,
here.
Swanitzer Dave,
here.
Mr. Speaker,
here.
McComey,
here.
57 present, 3 excused.
Please join us.
Let us pray. Merciful and loving God, we thank you for all the opportunities and challenges that have come our way this week in the House of Representatives. Help us to learn and grow from the process of making and changing laws for the benefit of all the people in the state of Wyoming. We thank you for the beauty of this state, the mountains and plains, the lakes and streams, the forests and hills, and especially for the diverse and independent nature of the people whom we represent. Grant us continued strength to serve them in the weeks to come through your mighty Spirit. Amen.
Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We're at that order of business journal committee report.
Mr. Speaker, your journal committee reports that the journal of February 10th, 2011 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Signed, Representative Kasparek, Representative Freeman.
Messages from the Senate.
Message number 235, Mr. Speaker, the Senate adopted the Committee of the Whole report, failing the bills as below by the vote indicated. House Bill 101, Vicious Animals, Interference with Game Wardens, Ayes 6, Noes 21. Signed, the bill has been indefinitely postponed. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 236, Mr. Speaker, the Senate adopted the Committee of the Whole report, failing the bills as below by the vote indicated. House Joint Resolution 2, Resolution U.S. Constitution requiring a balanced budget, Ayes 5, Noes 22, Excuse 3. The bill has been indefinitely postponed. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 237, Mr. Speaker, the bills adopted the Committee of the Whole report, failing the bills as below by the vote indicated. House Joint Resolution 6, Private Property Protection, Ayes 9, Noes 18, Excuse 3. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May I have privilege of the floor?
Please proceed.
I've got four rather important guests here that I had to go to Rawlins last night and pick up because the roads were so bad, and my wife didn't want to finish driving, so I drove to Rawlins last night and came back. But I'll introduce four people here today. First in the West Gallery, my wife, TJ. My granddaughter, Mariah, my granddaughter, Callie, and on the floor here today is my firstborn granddaughter, Aaliyah. Please welcome them to the House of Representatives.
Welcome to the House. Representative Botten.
Mr. Speaker, privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
Members of the House, it's my pleasure to introduce four people who came all the way down here from Sheridan County. These folks are foreign exchange students and their escort. They're brought here by the Federal Freedom Support Act, and they are part of that legislation. Sponsors future leaders exchange students to come from other countries, primarily Eastern Europe, and but some others, to come to the United States and learn about our government and about leadership in our country. And I would like them to stand up when I call their names. Elena Nesibulina from Russia, and she's attending Tongue River High School. Mila Mitra from Bangladesh, and she is attending Sheridan High School. Almira Gafiatulina from Russia, and she's attending Sheridan High School. I hope I pronounced all those right. And their escort, Donna Shelley.
Yay!
Dobre utra. Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You're going to...
Chairman Berger, go ahead.
Oh.
It's okay.
Please proceed.
Mr. Speaker, it's okay. Go ahead, Chairman Berger.
I can defer to you.
That's okay. You have more rank.
Yeah. I love being vertically challenged and still having rank. But you're going to notice here soon that this is going to be Sheridan County Day. And... I wanted to take a brief moment, though, because I normally don't have very many good friends come to visit me. But I have a dear, dear friend, Ms. Mary Daly from Bighorn, Wyoming, who drove down yesterday. And also next to her is my very dear young friend, Ava Elizabeth Taylor, who are visiting us. Welcome. Welcome. And I'll now defer, Mr. Speaker, to the good representative from Cheyenne.
Mr. Speaker, privilege of the floor. Please proceed.
I have some very, very special guests for us this morning.
In the south balcony, I have Mr. Woodard's fifth grade class from Pioneer Park Elementary. And in the west gallery, I have half of Mrs. Kensler's fifth grade class from Pioneer Park Elementary. Thank you for coming.
Representative Patton.
Privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a young lady that is up in the balcony that worked with me for about 4 years on the Government Affairs Committee of the Chamber of Commerce. She is now the chairman of that committee, a delightful lady whose profession is with the Sheridan College, Northwest Community College, Wendy Smith. Wendy, welcome.
Anyone else for privilege of the floor before we get to special events? As our doctor of the day, we have Dr. Ron Malm. I don't know if he's... I don't see him back there. There he is. Ronnie and I, we... And nurse of the day, Betsy Hartman, also from Cheyenne. Members of the House, after reaching the crossover period this week, we have a wonderful treat for you in store today. To help celebrate this legislative milestone, Steve Schrepferman is joining us on behalf of the Wyoming Arts Alliance to introduce a special group of students that are here to entertain us today in conjunction with Arts Advocacy Day. Please help me in welcoming Mr. Schrepferman to the chamber.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, honorable representatives. I am Steve Schrepferman, and I have the honor and privilege to be the announcer on this Arts Advocacy Day and to bring to your attention a couple of items. First, the Wyoming Arts Alliance is hosting a barbecue box lunch in the Hirschler Tunnels between 12 and 1:30 for legislators and staff, so please join us. We have lots of food. Second, is a reminder that tonight is the Governor's Arts Award dinner and ceremony in the Little America Ballroom at 6 p.m. And finally, a very special arts performance. I'm delighted to introduce the Sheridan College Chamber Choir. The choir is made up of 12 singers from Montana and Wyoming. These students come with varying educational majors, criminal justice, engineering, elementary education, psychology, theater, mathematics, and music education. The Sheridan College Chamber Choir is under the direction of Gene Seger with Loretta Tonick on piano. This morning they will be performing The Awakening. Words and music by Joseph M. Martin. This musical selection asks the question, what would the world be like without music? Thank you.
want to take the opportunity to thank all of you for joining us today and really reminding us how much music enriches our lives. So thank you very much for taking the time, and we wish you the best of luck in your academic endeavors. We're at that order of business, signing of enrolled acts. House Enrolled Act Number 1. The reading clerk will read the enrolled act.
Number 2.
Oh, that's because we've got this one. That's this one.
House Enrolled Act Number 1, being original House Bill Number 3. An act relating to alcohol.
I am about
being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
About to sign enrolled act number 1, being original House Bill 3. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act Number 2, being original House Bill Number 19, an act relating to circuit court judges.
I am about to sign Enrolled Act Number 2, being original House Bill 19. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act Number 3, being original House Bill Number 31, an act relating to the Paramutual Commission.
I am about to sign Enrolled Act Number 3, being original House Bill 31. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act Number 4, being original House Bill Number 60, an act relating to taxation and revenue.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 4, being original House Bill Number 60. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act Number 5, being original House Bill Number 61, an act relating to water development projects.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 5, being original House Bill 61. I have so signed. We're at that order of business. Senate files on first reading. The first Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 132.
Senate File 132, introduced by Senator Hastert, an act relating to...
First reading the bill.
An act relating to strangulation of a household member.
Senate File 132 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 70.
Senate File 70, introduced by School Finance.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to public education regarding accountability.
Senate File 70 is referred to Committee Number 4, Education. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 146.
Senate File 146, introduced by Senator Nicholas.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to teacher contracts.
Senate File 146 is referred to Committee Number 4, Education. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 150.
Senate File Number 150 being originated by Senator Nicholas.
First reading the bill.
An act relating to notaries.
Senate File 150 is referred to Committee Number 7. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 105.
Senate File 105 introduced by Senator Jennings.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to public land, state control of certain land.
And Senate File 105 will be referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 118.
Senate File 118 introduced by Senator Hastert.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to labor and employment, career and technical training grants.
Senate File 118 is referred to Committee Number 4, Education. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 139.
Senate File 139, introduced by Senator Scott.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to health care pilot project amendments.
Senate File 139 is referred to Committee Number 10, Labor. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 145.
Senate File 145, introduced by Senator Peterson.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to Medicaid fraud recovery.
And Senate File 145 is referred to Committee Number 10, Labor. We're at that order of business. Bills on second reading. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 18. Let's do standing committee reports real quick, Bill.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom is referred Senate File 79 engrossed, respectfully refers that it be do pass. Ayes, Barbudo, Brechtel, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Nicholas, Peasley, Throne, excused, Brown, signed Representative Brechtel, Vice Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom is referred Senate File 134, engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House that it do pass. Ayes, Barbudo, Brechtel, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Nicholas, Peasley, Throne, excused, Brown, signed Representative Brechtel, Vice Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom is referred Senate File 138, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Barbudo, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Nicholas, Throne, no, Brechtel, Peasley, excused, Brown, signed Representative Brechtel, Vice Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number six, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom is referred Senate File 48, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Bonner, Botten, Connolly, Davison, Yagi, McKim, McComey, Petroff, Shepperson, signed Representative McComey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number six, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 62, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Bonner, Botten, Connolly, Davison, Yagi, McKim, McComey, Petroff, Shepperson, signed Representative McComey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number seven, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred Senate File 14, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Illaway, Yagi, Croker, Patton, Shepperson, Stubson. No, Blickery, Byrd, Roscoe. Signed, Representative Illaway, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number eight, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred Senate File 51, engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Blake, Bonner, Kennedy, McKim, Peterson, no, Quarberg, Vronish, Swanitzer, Dave, conflict, Botten, signed Representative Quarberg, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number eight, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred Senate File 115, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Bonner, Kennedy, McKim, Peterson, Quarberg, Vronish, Swanitzer, Dave, conflict, Botten, signed Representative Quarberg, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred Senate File 25, engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Barbudo, Kraft, Gingrey, Green, Hunt, Miller, Peasley, no, Gay, Harvey, signed Representative Harvey, Chairman.
Three referrals, Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number six, Travel, would like to re-refer Senate File 62 to committee, your committee number two, Appropriations. It has a fiscal note.
It's been moved for re-referral of Senate File number 62 to committee number two, Appropriations. Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Any other re-referrals? Would you like to re-refer Senate File 25 to committee number two?
Mr. Speaker, I would like to re-refer Senate File 25 to your Appropriations Committee number two.
It's been moved for re-referral of Senate File 25 to committee number two, Appropriations. Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. We're now at that order of business, bills on second reading. The first bill for our consideration will be Senate File 18.
Senate File 18, introduced by the Transportation Committee, an act relating to commercial driving Federal Motor Carrier Safety Act compliance.
Senate File 18 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 21.
Senate File 21, introduced by Senator Geis, an act relating to taxation and revenue, property tax exemption for nonprofit museum.
Senate File 21 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 24.
Senate File 24, introduced by Senator Martin, an act relating to state investments.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 24, and we'll explain it. Ladies and gentlemen, this amendment deals with some of the fiduciary responsibility issues that were discussed yesterday on first reading. And to follow up on that, I, you know, after the first reading, after the Committee on the Whole, I had the opportunity, along with the good representative from District 7, to go down and visit with the state treasurer about this and how it related to the fiduciary rules and the prudent investment rules that are found in Title IX. And the foundation of this amendment is, historically speaking, these investments have not all had happy endings. We have had some that worked, and we've had some that haven't. And the ones that haven't have cost us a lot of money, not only in the fact that the default caused our initial investment to be compromised, but it also involved, in the case of one of them that dealt with a defunct airline or airplane rehabilitation company in the Bighorn Basin, it cost many thousands of dollars in legal fees. These liquidation costs, as I say, are ugly things. We end up owning property that we really don't want to own. In that regard, looking at Senate File 24 in consultation with the Treasurer, he recommended that, you know, if we go along and approve this bill, that we should have a $25 million limitation on any given project. And that's really all my amendment does, is take that recommendation and include that as part of the statute here. This was brought about, I guess, by looking at, you know, what is possible in this regard. A handout that we received listed, well, we have, you know, two $80 million projects that might be interested in this. We've got another one that's $600 million that is a possibility. And, you know, I think when we get into those kind of numbers, when we talk about the fact that we really have a, you know, if we want to look at our investment portfolio as being a bank, you know, we've got approximately a $16 billion portfolio. And you take $600 million, you know, that's, what, 3 or 4% of the total portfolio. And, you know, if you talk to any banker, you know, that may have $16 billion in assets in the bank, they would never consider making a $600 million loan. Now, the way banks do this, if they find an attractive opportunity to loan someone $600 million, which these bonds simply are, what they'll do is work out, they'll look for other banks that may have extra loanable funds, and they work out participating arrangements. So out of $600 million, one of them might take $50 million, another one might take 40 million and so on, and they all do their own due diligence in determining whether it's a good way to participate or whether this participating arrangement is good for that bank. And this is even more important, I think, for a state government. You know, we don't have a bunch of loan officers to really dig into these kind of things. These bonds, industrial development bonds are, you know, they're unregistered. The Securities and Exchange Commission, if they're not registered with them, they're not tradable, and therefore they're not marketable. So there's, you know, we're kind of out on our own here, and we're talking about 4% of a portfolio as being possible. And I think what this amendment does, in addition to following the recommendation of the state treasurer that's in office now, it anticipates a need to be prudent, or I should say consistent with the prudent investment rule. And that's the rule that's in the statute that the treasurer is bound to uphold. And while, you know, I'm confident that the treasurer we have, you know, in office now would never make a loan over $25 million anyway because of what he told me, I just think it's good policy to have that in statute. Now, if there's ever some exceptional opportunity where the state has a chance to help somebody at a higher amount than that, I think this legislature is capable of increasing it if this should come up. But I don't think we should leave it House Bill 24 in the condition it's in right now. So that's my rationale, and I'd be glad to entertain questions if there are any. But I'd urge your approval.
Representative Pedersen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just wanted to speak. This amendment is a phenomenal amendment, but I think the next amendment is even better. And that's why I wanted to come up and speak with us about it and what the good representative from House District 40 and I did is we went down and we spoke to the treasurer, and then we both came up and we went into the room over here at different times, couldn't find each other as we're drafting our process, and we ended up coming up with two slightly different ways. And I just want to discuss what those two ways are and how I think it affects the portfolio. And I think that we're exactly right on the interpreter from the interpretation of the treasurer is that if you're going to increase the allotment that you can put into these really LDIs in the form of these industrial development bonds, what you need to do is cap each one of those investments. And so what the First Amendment does is takes that down from the current level that we allow the process to work, which, as we talked about, goes through the business council. They form their process, then it goes to the treasurer. You get feedback. You also get feedback from the AG on this, and then it goes to the governor for finalization. And during that point, and what the good representative from House District 40 said is absolutely right, and that is that the treasurer is charged with the prudent investor rule, and his first charge is in fact total return to the portfolio and not sacrificing it for the sole sake of economic development. But if he can accomplish both with one, then that would be the tool that this would be used for. What this amendment does is currently, as you read the legislation, it has a $100 million cap. So what we've said to the treasurer, the governor, the business council, AG, everybody involved, is that we trust you up to a point of $100 million to make those decisions without any legislative input. This caps that and says that it's now 75% less is what this says. It says now it's only going to be $25 million in any one of these, whereas before we said we trust the process up to $100 million. If you look, and I think that it's germane to speak to the second one because it deals with the same line of the amendment now, I would at least talk about it. What the next amendment does is says, okay, we've said that we trust the process for $100 million, So let's say that the process will go through at $100 million and we'll allow it that no single investment can exceed that $100 million unless it comes through the legislative process, which was really a large part of the conversation with the Treasurer yesterday is, okay, what we need to do is maybe have a little more oversight with the legislature on some of these larger investments. So all we're saying is, okay, the process works at $100 million, and if we're going to increase it, let's leave it, that individual cap at $100 million. And then they have to come back through here. And my purpose of that is it creates transparency so that if we're going to increase this to this $600 million, that over that Sublette County couldn't do a project without coming and getting all the feedback from all the representatives from Albany and Laramie County and Campbell County and Carbon County and all the different, and every county that's out there, and going through this process and saying, is this what's right for the state? Is this what we want to do? And with this process in, I think that this is how we can make the bill supportable, is to say that, fine, we trust the process, we trust the prudent investor rule, we think that this process can work, but what we're going to say is that our current cap of $100 million is something that we believe in, and if it's going to be over that, we need to come back and take a look at it as a body. And so this current amendment is a good amendment, and I like it, but if you think about also this, $100 million is a 2% of the total assets within the fund right now that could go into any single investment. What you've said now is that you're limited because what this pertains to is to the is when you look at the PMTF and as the LDIs come out of there, it's 2% of the total assets is $100 million. If you ratchet that down to the $25 million, you've now said. That you're taking that down to a quarter of a percent in any one given asset. Well, when you talk about portfolio diversification, there's a point of diminishing returns where if you cannot concentrate into any one asset, you will lose possible upside capture ratio based on the fact that you've diversified yourself to a point that you'll never gain any upside. And so I think that the process works at $100 million for a 2% allocation to any single fund, and I would encourage the body to resist the First Amendment and go with the Second Amendment, and I'll just say.
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against the amendment, I think the previous speaker makes some great points, and I do think probably the coming second reading amendment is probably a better avenue to take. But just keep in mind that we have had this $100 million authority and statute for years and years and years and years. This is a substantial step backwards for this program. And one of the reasons is the program is designed for very big dollar projects. I mean, if you have smaller dollar projects that go through the Challenge Loan Program or any of the other number of programs that we have through the Big Business Council, this is a set-aside program that deals with significant investment into the state. And by pulling an arbitrary number out of the air, which is apparent to me that this is what the $25 million is just a number chosen out of the air, you're limiting your opportunities before you're even able to evaluate the strength of a proposal, the possibility of the state's return on that proposal, and whether it makes sense for the state of Wyoming. And there was a discussion that a number of the projects already in discussions would be over and above this $25 million, this threshold. And so by voting for this amendment, you basically cease those conversations now, today. They end. No examination of whether it makes sense for the state, both from an investment perspective and an economic development perspective, but based upon pulling a number out of the air. And I don't think that's wise policy. Instead, I do think that the better avenue would be if we get up to that $100 million, the level that we have already set in statute and given authority to the Treasurer and the Governor to do for many, many years, then it's appropriate for the legislative body to come in and see if that makes sense or not. But to have an arbitrary cap on projects really throws out a whole host of projects that this program was specifically designed for. And so I'd urge the body to resist this amendment.
Representative Blickery.
Mr. Speaker, fellow representatives, those of us that signed on to this amendment signed on for one reason only, and that's due diligence when you lend. And the matter of fact is this is the state doing lending, making a loan that's essentially an unsecured loan. And another thing that we need to always remember is, if an entity is coming to the state to get this loan, we're probably their last chance. So at that point, we really need to be paying attention to what we're doing. And so the only reason that we brought this amendment is because we believe from the bottom of our hearts that if the state's going to get in the lending business, then the state needs to use the same due diligence that large and small banks use. Thank you.
Chairman Berger, first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Many of you should have received your Wyoming State Investment Portfolio that was dated November 30th, 2010, which is produced by our Treasurer's Office. And within that, they have an annual report stating all of their activities, all their responsibilities, and funding. And if I just want to reference you to page 33, which is called Investments for Public Purposes, and just to give you an idea of what some of these legislative designated investments are, one is farm loans, which are authorized at $275 million, irrigation districts, joint powers loans boards. Many of our communities have big water projects which have this type of a loan, airport construction, and one that we're working on right now, which is the Gillette-Madison Pipeline Project. They're large projects, typically community invested, and so it's an important process that we use in working with economic development, but more importantly, just working in most cases with the health and safety of our communities. And I would recommend that you take a good look at that. And I do think that the three amendments that are before you are good amendments to Senate File 24. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? First time, second time prior to the sponsor? Are you a first time? Oh, yes, you are. Chairman Childers.
Mr. Speaker, excuse me. I guess my point is I'm a little disturbed by discussing the Second Amendment when you're discussing when we have the First Amendment on the floor. I'm not saying that they're which is better or not, but I think from a point of order standpoint, I'm a little disturbed that, you know, basically some of the people would not have the opportunity to speak in the manner that they would if you allow them to talk about the Second Amendment with the First Amendment. So I guess in a way I'm calling a point of order that if you're going to discuss the Second Amendment again, especially for the second time, I really don't think you should be able to do that because I think it's wrong from a point of order standpoint. That's your call, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Chairman Childers, and you raise a valid point, except I would say that I think sometimes it's necessary to discuss indirectly the other amendment in the context is how it relates to the first and why you may be against the First Amendment. So I think as long as we kind of hold ourselves in check and keep it in context, I think it's okay. Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against the proposed First Amendment, and I do this to reserve a second chance.
Chairman Brown.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I just make the observation that the Second Amendment repeals the First Amendment. So if you vote on the First Amendment, you haven't foreclosed your options under the Second Amendment, okay? Now, under the First Amendment, it cuts it down to $25 million. What it comes down to is what level of risk do you want? If you were a bank, what level of risk would you give your CEO without involvement from the board of directors, and consider us to be the board of directors, and consider what level of risk do you want to allow the state treasurer to take, and he's got his processes, but nonetheless, what level of risk would you want him to take without our involvement? And everybody may come out with with a different answer. But anytime you get over 1%, if your skin doesn't start crawling, why, you haven't lost enough money yet. So think about that level of risk and think about where you want to put the state treasurer in terms of being able to make decisions at his discretion as an elected official, and where you want to establish perhaps some higher limit, but not solely at his discretion. And $25 million is an interesting number, and you might ask yourself this, because I do it all the time in the lending activity that I do. Simply ask yourself this. Run forward in time to the point where the loan's been made and the loan is bad, and the collateral is always a mess when you get it back. It is not the pristine condition it was in when the loan was made. And just ask yourself, if it comes to that, the $25 million's gone, or the $100 million, or whatever it is, you've got a bunch of junk for collateral, you've got all kinds of workout problems, attorney's fees, collection fees, appraiser's fees, guys with strong-arm fees and all that, and ask yourself, at what level do you want to assume the risk that that might happen? And how are you going to feel when one of these goes bad? Are you going to feel like, well, it was a reasonable risk, and we took a reasonable chance that prudent men would take? Or are you going to say, we went crazy and did something that, man, I'd do about anything to have that back? So on and for the First Amendment, understanding that the Second Amendment would repeal the First Amendment, and that'll give us a chance to have a progressive discussion that really goes to what sort of posture do you want to put yourself in and risk-taking.
Representative Patton, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want to reiterate something that was said yesterday, and that is, if you view this in the light of an investment, you have to add a comma and say for developmental purposes of the state of Wyoming. You ought not to look at this as a complementary thing that the state treasurer is looking for to invest money in. The portfolio is pretty well handled. It's worked very, very well as it's been managed. And I did go down to the treasurer's office day before yesterday and did inquire as to who proposed this. Was this something that the state treasurer's office was desiring? And the answer was, they would do, as long as you leave the may in there, that they may do this, that they would not object. However, it was not their idea. It is really, as the chairman of the Appropriations Committee just mentioned, as a part of industrial development, and that's the tool that is looking for it, not the state treasurer's office, as something complementary to the investment portfolio of the state of Wyoming. It does not follow into line with the prudent man rule. I don't know how many of you made a living doing this, but those that did make a living at it weren't a part of the fees that were discussed, because it's not a marketable investment. So with that, whatever limitation you put on it will have my approval.
Mr. Speaker, pro tem. Mr. Minority, floor leader, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do agree with the due diligence contained in second reading amendment number one. So I would suggest we vote this up, and then we can determine the level at the previously mentioned dollar amounts on our second reading.
Anyone else for their first time? We're on to our second time. Anyone for their second time prior to the sponsor? Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Just to answer a couple of those concerns, there was a statement that these are essentially unsecured loans, and that can't be further from the truth. As I told you yesterday in walking through what the requirements of these bonds are, they have to put forward hard assets or in 25% in excess of what the bond amount is. And so when you're going into this thing, it's hard resellable assets. You're talking about, you know, equipment, real estate, factories, all those sorts of things. They have to put that in, and there's a 25% equity cushion over and above what the bond amount is. And so if a loan is to go bad, you have collateral not only to cover the bond amount, but 25% over that to cover all these other costs that were referred to. And that's because we want to be safe and we want to be secure with how we're using these state funds. There's also a comment that this has to be a source of financing of last resort for these companies. And again, that can't be further from the truth. What you're talking about is companies of the highest financial strength. I mean, those are the only folks that make it through the five pages of requirements that they have to make it through to even qualify to apply for this bond program. But what it does do is it gives the treasurer and the governor the ability to look at this and say, if from an investment perspective, it makes sense to maybe lower the amount on that bond by a couple basis points over what they might be able to get elsewhere, that is an incentive to bring those folks to Wyoming instead of send them somewhere else in the country. That's why it's an economic development tool. And so these aren't the dregs of corporate society coming to talk to us about these. These are the best and strongest companies in the country that are talking to us about these things. There was a comment that wouldn't you want your board of directors to look at a loan over 1%? But again, that's not what this amendment does. If we're going to talk about the banking context, would you want to set a policy that we're going to only lend up to $25,000 no matter what, no matter how strong the application is, no matter what the upside is, no matter what the economic development opportunities are? Because that's what this bill does. It doesn't say if you get over this, you're going to come to the legislature and talk to us about it. It says here's the hard and fast rule, and if there's great opportunities that are over and above this $25 million, tough. Wyoming's out of the market and out of the running for that. And in my mind, that's not good policy. And it's not good policy when you have four different levels of due diligence on these things. You have a business council that spends months processing and looking at these applications. Then you have the attorney general's office. Then you have the governor's office. And then you have the treasurer's office. And it has to make it through all four of those hoops before it ever becomes a reality. So this is a process that has due diligence. It is a process that doesn't need arbitrary caps on it. And I would urge you to defeat this amendment.
Anyone else for their second time prior to the sponsor? Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The previous speaker covered things that I was going to do, so I won't do that one. But the one other thing I think we've got to remember, we've had this $100 million on the books for a number of years. It's worked. It has not caused us any problem. We haven't used that for making poor loans and that sort of thing. So I urge your defeat of the First Amendment.
Anyone else for the second time prior to the sponsor? Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Pro Tem. The $100,000 number keeps coming back. The $100,000 number that's in the existing statute is the amount of money in this particular class of public purposes. If you looked at the handout that you were given yesterday, and if you kept it, you can see there's about a dozen or more different types of categories of public purpose loans that we've identified. And under industrial development bonds, the current limit is $100,000. Now, the misnomer here is that there's an implication that there's been a $100,000 loan made to one entity out of this limit, and that's never happened. We've probably never made a $25 million one. We've had more than one outstanding within that $100,000 cap, but we've never had any single lender out to $100,000. So this is not an overly restrictive thing. We're saying that if there's a need for any more money than that, certainly there's other avenues for them to seek credit. We can participate under this amendment in an $80 million project. All we're saying is that we want somebody else to put some skin in the game too, so we can have the self-assurance that we're not the only ones sticking our neck out at the point of $80 million by ourselves. So that's all it is. The collateral part, you know, don't you know, don't become too content with the collateral type of argument, because what we're looking at in terms of a percentage of down payment that they would make or something, and the equity that is left and so on, at the time the loan is executed, might be a totally different thing than the amount of collateral you end up with at the time of foreclosure. And that's just something for you to keep in mind. I guess everybody has their own philosophy on this. I would hope that you, when you make your decision on this, that you would treat this as though you were the one that had the $16 million. And would you do it out of your own portfolio? So with that, I would urge your support and call the question. Thank you.
We are on second reading, amendment number 1. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
The chair is in doubt. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed? Oh, I guess we don't need to do that. Representative Pedersen.
Mr. Speaker, I move a second reading amendment number, Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, Mr. Speaker, pro tem. I move second reading amendment number 2, the Senate file 24. I will first say that if it wasn't okay to speak to both amendments on it, then I apologize. I thought that the two merged together specifically because they spoke on the same topic, and that was my goal, is because it was also the same line and same piece in the amendment, and I thought that it was germane at least to our conversation. And I'm just going to speak for a first time. I don't want to beat this into the ground. I think that passing the first one was a good measure. This one deletes the first one and goes with the current really $100 million cap, and anything above that would go for legislative approval, which would give transparency, and this body would have the ability to make those types of decisions on and above what is currently charged to the Treasurer underneath the prudent investor rule, which requires him to go through those types of processes. So I'll speak my first time, sit back, wait for any questions, and then have a second go around.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, pro tem. The $100 million cap is a little confusing here. I guess you could say we have a $100 million cap right now because we don't have a cap. The only cap we have is we have $100 million in that particular public purpose loan fund. And I guess technically you could say that, yeah, we could lend $100 million out tomorrow based on that, but the point is we've never had a situation in the past where we've lent out $100 million, and it was for a good reason. The other thing I want to point out in terms of the first part of this amendment is that the state treasurer recommended $25 million. He didn't recommend $100 million per project. He recommended $25 million. He specifically said that if the project is bigger than that, they can have other people step up and provide the balance, if that's the case. And I think that's a good way to look at it. So I'd urge you to resist this amendment. Thank you.
Representative Stubson, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, pro tem, on and for second reading amendment number 2. I do think this is a good way to go. As the good previous speaker said, this $100 million limit is what's existed in statute for a number of years. And so we aren't taking a huge step backwards as we are with the bill as currently amended. But we are putting in place protections that those significant those large investments come back before this body, that we get to look at them and put a fifth level of that due diligence on top of that detailed due diligence system that I already described. And so I do think this is a good approach. Of course, whatever the treasurer wants to do in a given scenario, he can do. If he decides he doesn't want to do over $25 million, he's got the discretion to do that now with this amendment in place. So I think it's a better route to go, and I just urge your support for the amendment.
Chairman Brown, for your first time.
Mr. Speaker, Pro Tem, I support this amendment. I think it makes sense. The state treasurer's not an idiot. I don't think we're ever going to elect an idiot. He has a good staff. They do good risk assessment, and I'm comfortable with them going up to $100 million. I'm not comfortable with them being unlimited. I'm not comfortable with them going to $600 million without some involvement from us. But I think this is a good number and represents a good level of added protection for extraordinary risk. And we might sometimes say we're going to take an extraordinary risk. We're going to sink $300 or $400 or $500 million into something. But if we're going to do that, we ought to all be in that boat together, and it ought to be before this body. So on in favor of this amendment.
Representative Zwan and Sir Dave, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. I actually have a question, and I want to have a definition of what a specific legislative authorization is. As I understand it, we would have to come back and do a bill. And if that is the case, if it's really a hot project, that would take a year's time. So anyway, if somebody could just address that segment of or is it just a special committee we call together? Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? Anyone else? We are on to second time. Anyone for their second time? Chairman Brown.
Mr. Speaker, Pro Tem, I think maybe the answer to that last argument is that projects over $100 million that are hot projects are the ones we really ought to be looking at. They're the ones, and if a $100 million project can get put together in less than a year, and waiting for us to approve it is going to be the deal breaker. Let it break. So that doesn't concern me at all. On and for the amendment.
Second time, Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, or Speaker Pro Tem. I guess that we've had enough of a debate on this. We're down to personal philosophy here, including the Treasurer's personal philosophy. And his philosophy or his recommendation was $25 million, and what we have before us right now is $100 million, so it's off by a factor of four in his mind. And part of the reason I think it's important that we probably listen to this treasurer is that, you know, he's not going to be the treasurer forever, but he's had a lot of experience in this area, and he really feels from a fiduciary responsible standpoint that's all he would ever approve anyway. So it's, you know, if it's not a terribly significant issue to us anyway at this point, because he's not going to approve anything above $25 million. But I think that there's a need to, you know, treat state funds not like a bank reservoir of money, but to treat it like our trust funds that we really have a fiduciary responsibility to not play with for economic development purposes in such a large way as this amendment would prescribe. So I urge you not to vote for this second reading amendment. Thank you.
Anyone else for their second time prior to the sponsor? Representative Pedersen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Pro Tem, I would just address two things. One is that the length of time in the underwriting process was already previously spoken to by the good representative from Laramie, and we don't want to do anything that takes less than a year to throw out more than $100 million. But also, you go through the process right now. It takes that long anyway, and that was actually testimony words given from the treasurer yesterday. He said, well, once you go through the process of having the business council, and then you go through the treasurer, and we contract out a consultant on this who comes back and gives you a recommended risk-free rate of return on this. So they got to go through that, and then the treasurer makes his recommendation based on the prudent investor rule. And then we make sure that the AG makes sure that we're not doing anything that's illegal, and then the governor is the final one to sign off on it. That process doesn't happen in a week. We'll have plenty of time to come back, especially for a larger project that this would pertain to. And I completely agree with a good representative from House District 40 in that the reference that the treasurer said was $25 million, but he said $25 million, and then he said what I said too. He said, and so we both took out two different things. The treasurer didn't say $25 million, a hard cap. What he said was that maybe you could think about $25 million, and then anything above that could be a legislative, with legislative approval. Not a $25 million hard cap, but with legislative approval. So what I went through is I went back through the process and started looking through the bill and speaking to the LSO. And currently we have $100 million that we trust the treasurer, we trust the process, we do all this process. So I said, let's take what the treasurer said, and he says, you need legislative approval if you want to do a bigger project. And I said, well, we've already trusted them up to a point of $100 million, so I think that going forward we trust the process, trust the treasurer, the governor, the AG, the business council for anything above that level. So that's what the $100 million reference is in here, because that's what was spoken down there, is that these larger projects should have legislative approval. And what was thrown out is possibility of 25, and I think we've already done 100, and I don't want to reduce it to that level. So with that, I call for the question.
All those in favor of second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 24, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The amendment is adopted. Senate File 24 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is...
Mr. Speaker.
Stand by. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Sorry, Mr. Speaker. Sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to give you all one of those lessons in legislative procedure. Mason Section 752 says it's inappropriate for a member in a debate to use the name of an executive for the purpose of influencing the vote of members. So what that means is you can say the person in the executive branch is in favor of this. You can't say vote for this because the person in the executive branch is in favor of it. I know that's a fine distinction, but we're supposed, it's to preserve the independence of this body, and so that's why I rise for that point of order.
The next bill for our consideration is Senate File. Stand by. Representative Patton.
Stand by, yes. Personal privilege, please.
Please proceed.
I would like, they're scattered in several balconies here, but I wanted to introduce them. This is a group from Sheridan, Ryan Franklin, who is the chairman of the Sheridan Chamber of Commerce, and with him is Leadership Sheridan Group, K.G. Culliver, Jeff Berger, Timothy Williams, over here, Karen Miller, Steve Johnson. He's never called Shorty. Stand up, Steve. Thank you. I have five more. Todd Kelly, Colin Betzler, Messiah Williams, Dixie Johnson. Dixie is the new executive director of the Chamber of Commerce in Sheridan, and Debbie Bellis. Thank you all for attending.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A quick privilege of the floor, please.
Please proceed.
With all the wonderful people we've had down here from Sheridan this morning with entertainment in the balcony and the youth and the educators and that sort of thing, my question is this. Who's left in Sheridan to turn off the lights tonight?
We'll take care of it.
Anyone else? Can we go with... We're still on second reading. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 26.
Senate File 26, introduced by the Transportation Committee, an act relating to speed limits on county roads.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I will withdraw Second Amendment reading number one at this time.
Second reading amendment number one to Senate File 26 has been withdrawn. Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. At this time, I'd move second reading amendment number two. Just to remind you somewhat of what the discussion was we were having yesterday in regards to this bill. This bill does two different things. It's setting your maximum speed limits on roads, and it also goes through what the process is. And so one part of this was that on page 2, line 23, it was setting the maximum speed limit, which is already in urban districts, is at 30. It was adding residential district, which is fine. There's a small distinction between what a residential district and an urban district is defined at. And then it added the word subdivision. What this was doing was deleting, you'll see up there, lines 9 through 11, the definition of subdivision, and it was removing the word definition, or the word subdivision in line 23. I just wanted to explain a little bit about this, because I had an opportunity last night to speak to a county attorney that knows this stuff really well, and he was one that was actually has been working on this bill throughout the summer. And I was finally understanding what they were trying to do. And so I'll try to back up and explain what happened in 2003. If this had been prior to 2003, it would be real easy just to get up and say, government has nothing to do with subdivisions. We don't regulate roads within a subdivision. In 2003, a case came out called McLean v. State. In that case, young kid driving through a trailer park gets pulled over. He gets cited for driving under suspension. Goes to court and says, you can't cite me. I'm in a trailer park when you pulled me over. The court comes back and says, well, actually, the definition of highway includes roads that the public may drive on. They may not be maintained by the public. They may not be government-controlled roads. But if the public is allowed on the road, then under the definition of the word highway, they can regulate on there. Now, and I remember that case, but I always thought the case stood for the proposition that you could regulate things like DUS and driving under suspension or DUI and things like that. What some people read that as, and what I've discovered, is some counties interpreted it one way and some interpreted it a different way. Some counties interpreted that case to mean that the default speed limits all of a sudden came into place. And if you remember from our conversation yesterday, the default for all other locations is 65. So somehow they made this logical jump, and I'm not sure if I would make that same jump, but to say that the default all of a sudden in 03, because of that case, took all the subdivision roads to 65. I'm not sure if I agree with that, but the point is that then when I argue that maybe that case doesn't really apply, the argument I get back is, well, maybe it should apply. Maybe we should be regulating the speed limits in subdivisions, because I guess there's been a public outcry to county commissioners that the people in subdivisions want to start having a speed limit in their subdivision so that the sheriff can now come enforce those. So, you know, this is one that I really don't have strong feelings one way or the other. I just wanted to make sure that we at least had this policy discussion, because I think this is sort of not a huge jump, but it's different than what we've always done or how we've looked at it, that we're going to start setting the speed limits within a subdivision that the government doesn't actually control those roads. We don't build the roads. We don't maintain the roads. But we're going to be setting the speed limits within that subdivision. And according to the conversations I had last night, was that there's quite a lot of people that have approached their county commissioners and really do want this. I'm a little hesitant on it, but, again, I don't really have strong feelings on it. I just wanted to make sure we had a straight up or down vote on this issue of adding in subdivisions. And not to get into trouble with mentioning the next one, but the next amendment's mine too. If we do leave subdivisions in, I have the next amendment that clearly takes out private roads, which was a different discussion yesterday. But if you have a private road that has clearly been labeled on the plat as being private, I just wanted to clarify that those were not included. So these would be roads in a subdivision that are not private, meaning that the public cannot come. They're roads that they're non-governmental, but the public is allowed to drive on them.
Representative Botten.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In response to Amendment 2, You know, the prior speaker indicated look at Amendment 3, and I just urge that that's the one we really want to consider. As to the policy here, the speaker mentioned that there is some disagreement as to the law on this topic. We're being told in committee that our friends at the county level and at the highway at state level are believing it's a default at 65 miles an hour, and that's why they're concerned. So I urge that you vote no on this second amendment, and let's look at the third. Thank you.
Chairman Simlek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would also encourage you to vote no on this amendment and look at the next amendment. I don't perceive this as the heavy hand of local government law enforcement coming in and providing, you know, authority over the subdivision roads as much as I do as a public safety issue. And I think it's, I mean, I understand that, you know, counties are involved in the development of subdivisions, the permits are required, there's a road study and analysis that's done prior to approving the subdivision roads, but so, you know, counties are already involved in you know, the subdivisions, and, you know, I was a little hesitant on General LaFile to support that, but the more I thought about it, it's really a safety issue for our families and for our children to live in subdivisions. So I think the county should have some authority there, and I would just ask that you would not adopt this second reading amendment. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I also would encourage the body to defeat this amendment and definitely look toward the amendment that's going to follow. I would be the last person that would want to tell somebody what to do on their private road. So we need to be, this makes, this amendment isn't as clear as the one that follows, and it definitely excludes the private roads and gives private property owners the opportunity to do what they want on their own roadways. So I would encourage the body to defeat this amendment.
Chairman Childers, first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against the amendment, I think in the county to the north that borders Yellowstone Park, we have had a number of cases that the citizens have come in and complained that they would like to see something done about one of these. It's a private road, but public easement. And there's enough of the public go through on it. And I think the county should be involved in it. As the previous speaker, not the previous speaker, the one before that spoke, they're involved when the subdivisions are made. I would hope later that they also address some of the problems that come up when the speed limit is abused on some of these roads. So I'm in favor, basically, of the commissioners being involved in these things and against the amendment.
Anyone else for their first time, second time prior to the sponsor? Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Voted up, down. I just wanted to make sure we had discussed this, so when you went home, I think most of your constituents are going to be real happy about having subdivisions in. I just wanted to make sure you understood that when those subdivisions that didn't want that you understood that we had done this because it was sort of going through without a lot of debate. And so just wanted to make sure it was clear that what we were doing. But, you know, from the explanations that have just been given, you know, maybe it's probably a good thing to leave subdivisions in. So maybe a no vote is the way to go on this.
Okay, all those in favor of second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 26, please say aye. Those opposed, no. Second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 26 has failed. Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd move second reading amendment number 3. Now, this one is a good one. This one, what it does is clarifies that we're not talking about private roads. And when I say private road, you'll see there it says 18.5 through 06. If you look that up, that is the provision in the subdivision law where a developer, they place on the plat, it actually spells it out on the plat, that all roads are private roads. And that's really the only way you can declare a road private in a subdivision is actually to put it on the plat. What that means is then you can put up a sign that says no trespassing. If you don't have that on your plat that says these are private roads, you actually can't put up a road, a sign, otherwise they're, the public can drive on your subdivision roads. So this will make it clear that those subdivisions that are clearly private subdivisions, that this would not apply, and I'd urge you to vote aye on this.
Representative Botten, first time.
Mr. Speaker, this is a friendly amendment and urge your support.
Chairman Korberg.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a good amendment, and I wish I'd thought of it when it was in committee. Thank you. Please vote aye.
First time, second time prior to the sponsor. All those in favor of second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 26, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Chairman Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I move second reading amendment number 4 to House Bill 26. Ladies and gentlemen, Senate File 26. Senate File 26 sets the default speed limit at 45 miles an hour. Now, I agreed that the First Amendment should be withdrawn because there's federal money involved. There's a lot of money involved. And we need the engineering studies, and we need or the requirement for engineering studies in order to set speed limits and be in compliance with the feds, and I understand that. I get that. But we don't have to set the default speed limit at 45 miles an hour to get the money from the feds. We can set it at 55 miles an hour. The lobbyist that I talked to didn't object to 55. And it's just a question of where you want to set the default. Now, with the federal money that we get, there will be funding for this program through the university. And that funding will do engineering studies on roads and drive setting speed limits. It can drive that either way. It can drive the speed limits up or it can drive them down. Now, one county that I'm quite familiar with has got 8,000 miles of county roads in it. And I just don't think that the commissioners are going to go out and study all 8,000 miles and raise the speed limit on the parts that can legitimately be raised on. They can get federal funding to do that, but I just frankly don't see them doing it. I see them a lot more incentivized to go out and do the engineering study and lower the speed limit on those parts that shouldn't be running at the default speed limit. And it's just human nature that's the way they're going to do it. And so I would argue that 55 is a lot more rational number. That's the default that they start from. And from that default, they can either lower them or they can raise them. There's going to be money available to do that, to engineer them in. But there are a lot of county roads, or unpaved roads, I shouldn't say county roads, there are a lot of unpaved roads in this state that are getting a lot of engineering. And they've got the minimum radiuses on the curves, they've got the site distances, they've got everything that the paved roads, they have bank curves, they have everything that the paved roads have. The only thing they don't have is pavement on them. And some of them are actual roadbeds that are ready for pavement, and they're just waiting the funding to put paving on. And to mandate, and some of them are long roads, and there's some long trips in this state that some I can think of. Drive from Lysite to Tensleep sometime. Drive from Atlantic City to Wamsutter. Drive from Rollins to south of Rollins to the forest. These are long trips. Drive from Rock River to Esterbrook. These are long trips, and they're good roads, and a lot of them are engineered. Now, people drive sometimes faster than they should. I don't dispute that. Does that mean that we all have to be penalized and we all have to drive at a ridiculously low speed limit so that those few that refuse to recognize when they ought to slow down will be protected so we can protect them from themselves? I just don't agree with doing it that way. So I think there are a lot of good arguments for setting it at 55, which is a rational speed limit. These roads, probably 55 is plenty. But that is a rational default speed limit. And if there's problems, if it's too fast, if people are not driving a rational speed on it, then there's federal money to commission a study that provides a basis acceptable under the federal guidelines to lower the speed limit. I just don't think that that our authorities are going to be compelled to go the other way and do these studies and raise the speed limit when you consider a county that has 8,000 miles of roads in it. I just don't see it happening. So those are my arguments to raise it, the default, from 55 or 45 to 55. And what we're really talking about is, where are we going to start from? Are we going to start at 45 with a whole bunch of efforts to raise it and some to lower it? We're going to start at 45, at 55, and have more effort to lower it and not feel the need to raise it. And I would argue that 55 is the right number. So on in favor of second reading amendment number 4.
Representative Botten.
Mr. Speaker, the question of what the default speed should be on these county roads, that's a matter for collective reasoning here after consideration of all the facts and what should be best done. Yesterday I referred to a speed study that was done by the Good University to address what would be the proper speed. Now, if the interim committee were to present a bill and just pick willy-nilly this 45-mile-an-hour default without any scientific basis, then you ought to just say no. But there is a scientific basis, and I want to try to describe that out of the study that was done. And this study is dated August 2010. A study was done of all 50 states, the default speeds on similar roads unpaved. They ranged between 35 miles an hour on the low end and 75 miles on the high end. We're at 65. We are at the high end. A speed study was done on specific random county roads in certain counties, and I'll tell you what they are because Mr. Majority Floor Leader says I can use the county names now. In the study base was Carbon County, 10 county roads, Converse County, 18, Crook, 26, Johnson County, 10, Laramie County, 11, Lincoln County, 2, Sweetwater County, 5, Uinta County, 1. Speed studies were done on these, and the average speed on all of these various roads was 45 miles an hour. Now, there's lots of tables, and I can make copies of this report for you after today if you want to see it. And so you can study it, and the mathematicians of the crowd can figure out one standard deviation, two standard deviation, whatever that means, means, mode, and average. But the fact is it averaged 45. So based on that scientific study, 45 was the number. Now let me share another thing in the study. These folks at the university across the mountain studied accidents because they wanted to get some information as to what amount of increase of speed by 5-mile-an-hour increments would have in terms of the percentage increase in accidents. They concluded that the risk of increase of an accident with injuries when you move from 40 to 45 miles an hour was 15.3%. From 45 miles an hour to 50 miles an hour increased by 18.6%. From 50 miles an hour to 55 miles an hour, 26.8% increase. So it's based upon all of this. It's only 9 pages. I can make you a copy. We had to come up with something. Now, if the collective wisdom of this body is that it should be higher or lower or dead on with the report, that's for us to decide. So if you think it should be 55, let's approve the amendment. If you think it should be 45, let's not approve the amendment. Thank you.
Chairman Childers, first time.
Well, Mr. Speaker, giving another reason to make it 45, the engineering studies more than likely could say 55, 65, 75. That's for a new road. But if you stick with the default of 45, you take into account what's going to happen on graveled roads. You're going to get washboarding, and speaking from personal experience, that you can lose control on washboarded roads. If you don't understand what that means where you have the ripples that you're running over. And it isn't hard for a gravel road to get a washboard condition. And then also, we're in a country that has a lot of bentonite, and no matter how good a gravel road you have, or even paved roads, that bentonite condition is hard to take away, and the roadbed does change. So my recommendation is stay at 45. If the county comes in, gravels or doesn't gravel the road, grade the road and smooth it out again. If they want to change it back to 55, that's fine. But I think a default should be 45.
Chairman Corbett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I'd like to thank my good colleague from over in Sheridan County for the explanation that truly this was an interim topic, and I appreciated the his input on the fact that the 45 was not a figure that was just randomly picked out of the sky during the interim by the Transportation Committee. That being said, it does set a default. And you all know your counties very well, and you know your constituencies, so this really is a policy decision. You know, whether you want to keep it at the 45 or you want to go to the 55. So it's, you know, it's really in your ballpark at this juncture. But I did appreciate the explanation that the committee in the interim did have some basis for setting the 45 to begin with.
Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members of the audience, I should say, I hope you're still all listening. The default limit, you know, we were told it can be raised by a study or it can be lowered by a study. And my personal feeling is 45 is a bit low, and there are a lot of roads where they might want to study that to make sure they could lower it. But I stand here in favor of this amendment because, well, I guess on one hand, it's a question of whether they study it to raise it or whether they study it to lower it. I prefer it to be a little bit higher and they can study it to lower it.
First time, Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and in favor of the amendment. Frankly, the 45 average probably isn't a bad number. I've traveled the road from Wamsutter up through Jeffrey City on up to Waltman, been on it many times. And there's portions of that road I'm going 60, 65, and there's portions of that road I'm going 30. Overall, I probably average about 45. But frankly, you're going to make criminals out of everyone traveling on that road, because I guarantee you they're not going to go 45 on the big flat stretches. They're going to slow down and go whatever their vehicle's capable of. So again, you know, we don't need this low a speed limit on our gravel roads in Wyoming. Frankly, I know of a lot of gravel roads that are a lot better than some of the paved roads in Carbon County and in Fremont County. So, boy, I'm going to be a no on the bill if we don't put this amendment on there.
Chairman Teeters, first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's always interesting to see a whole bunch of people that live in areas where there's pavement making these decisions for those of us that have 8-10 miles of gravel. But I can tell you I live at the end of a mile of 8-10 miles of gravel, and 55 is the standard accepted speed. That's what my dad told me was safe to drive. All of us that live out in the country know that 55 is a good default speed. And so if you live in an area where you've got pavement, you ought to let those of us that have to live at the end of the dirt road decide what the speed is. We know it's 55. So thanks.
Representative Croker, first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do want to make the point right now that the current default is 65 on dirt roads. So if this bill goes through, we're actually lowering it by 20 miles an hour. So it is going to change what's in statute right now, which is 65. So I think 55 is a good is a better compromise on and in favor of the amendment.
Anyone else for their first time, second time? Second time prior to the sponsor. And I would remind you, we're going to finish second reading before we get to lunch. So. Chairman Brown. Oh, I apologize. I didn't see Representative Miller over here. Go ahead.
Briefly, Mr. Speaker, thank you. Just to remind everyone, there were some acts in the past. One's called the Red Flag Act. It included automobiles. It limited their maximum speed of travel at 4 miles per hour in the country and 2 miles an hour in the city. And you needed a crew of three to travel with the automobile, one of which should carry a red flag walking 60 yards ahead of the vehicle. Enough said. Come on, folks.
Chairman Brown.
Mr. Speaker, just to add to that, we had a United States Supreme Court opinion written by one of our most famous poets, who was a justice on the U.S. Supreme Court, who said, when you're driving an automobile and it comes to a railroad track, you should stop and get out and walk up to the track and see if there's a train coming. We've evolved a long ways. And I would just ask you, how many of us in this room consider ourselves average? And should the default for what we do be the average? Now, I looked at this study that was referred to. 55% of the states are at 54% of the states are at 55 mile an hour. And when you look at 45 mile an hour, there's only six states that are 45 or less, and they're all east of the Mississippi. And if you go to 50 mile an hour, it goes up to 12 states, and only one is west of the Mississippi. So I think that 55 is a reasonable number. And the other thing I don't like, frankly, about some of this road posting that we're talking about is these signs can accumulate bullet holes so fast that I don't know. There must be people waiting out there in the brush. And way out in the country, pretty soon you can't even read these signs. You don't know what they say. And you've got some sheriff's deputy somewhere who's decided that today's the day he's got to do something, and bang, you get caught. And I just don't think it's fair. So I think 55 is a lot better number. On and for the amendment.
All those in favor of second reading amendment number 4 to House Bill 26, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Second reading amendment number 4 to Senate File 26 has been adopted. Senate File 26 having been read 2 separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 42.
Senate File 42, introduced by the Transportation Committee, an act relating to motor vehicle license plates, choice license plates for disabled veterans.
Senate File 42 having been read 2 separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 43.
Senate File 43, introduced by the Transportation Committee, an act relating to military affairs, Title 19, Veterans Commission's duties.
Senate File 43 having been read 2 separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 67.
Senate File 67, introduced by Senator Ross, an act relating to guardians and wards.
Senate File 67, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 68.
Senate File 68, introduced by Senator Ross, an act relating to summary probate amendments.
Senate File 68, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 77.
Senate File 77, introduced by Senator Geis, an act relating to county officers' removal from office.
Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move second reading amendment number 1, and just for brevity of time, since lunch is soon, I'll just point out that it's deleting the amendment of the person whose name is right next to mine on the second reading amendment. So it's just taking that amendment out and clarifying there was a little mistake with that first one, so this is correcting that.
All those in favor of second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 77, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 77 has been adopted. Senate File 77 having been read 2 separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection. Do you have another one? Oh, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 120.
Senate File 120, introduced by Senator Bebout, an act relating to government reorganization, workforce services, and employment reorganization.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I am not going to try and speak as quickly as you have been speaking. Members of the 61st, I bring you second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 120 and ask for your favorable consideration. All this amendment does is make the combination of Workforce Services and the Department of Employment a merger of agencies rather than a takeover by Workforce Services. Both of these agencies are roughly the same size. The Department of Employment has programs that we're all familiar with, OSHA, Workman's Comp, Unemployment Insurance. And we need these agencies to come together and to come together in harmony. And so I think for the employees in the Department of Employment, it's important that it be considered a merger that will help morale. These are service agencies. Also, it's already a done deal that the new director of this combined agency, whatever, however it transpires, is the current director of Workforce Services. So I think just in terms of promoting harmony and bringing these agencies together in the right way, we should treat it as a merger, which is what we did in our original House bill. And my position on this is based on discussions with various folks involved in the agency combination. So with that, I would answer questions. Or
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd urge your resistance to this. There was significant discussion in the committee, and I missed the dialogue on the floor of the House yesterday on this. I think what came out of the standing committee and from the Senate is that we need to have one that's taking the lead on that one. The deemer was that it should be Department of Workforce Services. And in turn, there is going to be a second, or I guess now a third committee amendment that would put Department of Employment back in as to where the reporting goes. And I will explain that when we get a chance to do it tomorrow. But I'd urge your resistance to this proposed amendment.
Anyone else for the first time? Representatives Juan and Serdan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would urge your support of this amendment. This is historically, when we've had our reorganizations in the past, especially in 1991, how we've merged agencies together. There is, I'm not sure that a fairness issue matters, but we did take this agency Workforce Services out of the Department of Employment about a decade ago, and so it does seem slightly awkward that all of a sudden we're making Workforce Services the mass entity and taking an entity we've had, the Department of Employment, for a very long time and, you know, sucking them into this other agency. And I do agree that over the last 6 years, I've had three bills passed in this body that have further separated these two entities into one another, and all of a sudden now we're sucking them right back in. But there is, you know, a concern of equity of these agencies and how we're going to proceed. We voted as a body on this bill, said that was the right way to go, that we're not trying to strong-arm anyone into anything. What we've done with these two agencies is we've really let one be the public face of the state, the workforce agency, because they have locations all over the state, and employment is kind of the back room that deals with workers' comp and unemployment insurance and everything that maybe is not as publicly well-known. And we've done that through some policy decisions in this body, but I would say a merger of two equal-sized agencies into one and letting them get along and decide their programs is probably the better approach to go over the long run. Just because I have a lot of state employees in my district, and I know there are some feelings out there and some concern out there that this is probably a more equitable move and one that the state should be taking. Thank you.
Anyone else for the first time, second time prior to the sponsor, Representative Throne?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want to add that the new agency will be called the Department of Workforce Services, so that deals with the cost issue, the publicity issue. I've been working on this issue for several months, and believe that for all the reasons that have been said, a merger is the way to go. And with that, I'd call for the question.
All those in favor of second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 120, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
All those in favor, please stand.
The amendment is adopted. Senate File 120 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege to the floor.
Please proceed.
Up in the south balcony and the west balcony, we have Mr. Lake and the rest of Mrs. Kensler's fifth grade class from Pioneer Park Elementary. If you'd like to stand up, please. Welcome to the House.
Representative Yagi.
Privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
We've got up to my right here, we've got the Skills USA state officers. I'd like to introduce those to you since two of them are from my little hometown, Lyman. We have Brittany Collins, the president from Lyman, Parker Jackson, the treasurer from Lyman. We have Skeeter Judd from Douglas, Zach Kelsey and Zach Gaines from Cheyenne Central. Maggie Rux from Gillette, their advisors, Jason Wheeler from Lyman, and Henry Well from Douglas, and the person that's over this is Tony Decklever from Skills USA. Welcome to the House.
Any other privilege of the floor? Committee announcements? Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will meet Monday at noon recess in House 18. We'll take up Senate File 54, Disability Insurance Rates Notice, and then we'll work on Senate File 113, Engrossed Surveyors and Engineers Practice Act Revisions.
Chairman Childers.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 3, Revenue, still doesn't have any bills, and we are not meeting on Friday. That's good.
Enjoy your time off. Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 8, Transportation and Military Affairs, will meet next Tuesday, February 15th, 10 minutes after adjournment, and we will hear two bills, Senate File 112, Engrossed National Guard Billeted Soldiers Fund, and Senate File 131, Military Department Federally Funded Positions.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 6, Travel, will meet Monday at 8 a.m. in room H10 to consider the following bills. Senate File 85, Engrossed Game and Fish Violations Penalties. And Senate File 39, Engrossed Aquatic Invasive Species Reciprocity.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 4, Education, will not be meeting today at lunch, so enjoy your lunch.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet Monday morning at 8 a.m. in room H18 to hear two bills. Senate File 121, Performance-Based Evaluation and Design, and Senate File 143, Federal Natural Resources Policy.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet 15 minutes upon noon recess in room H17. To hear Senate File 102, Medicaid Cost Study, and Senate File 50, Engrossed Medicaid Options Study.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, or Chairman Berger, I'm sorry, there's a roadblock here in my way.
There's a road jam, that's for sure. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2 will meet on Monday, February 14th at 8:30, room 204, to hear Senate File 144, State-Funded Construction Projects Preference Provisions. And also, Mr. Speaker, I'd just like to remind the body that on Monday at some point in time, we will start House Bill 1, so you may want to do a little homework over the weekend. Thank you.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Here's the roadmap for the rest of the day. We will do bills on third reading and final passage consent list, bills on third reading and final passage regular list, Senate enrolled asks, then requests to concur with Senate amendments to House bills. Then we will go to general file. When we get to general file, I will ask to move joint resolution number 5 down on your list to below bill number 20, the 20th bill, which is Senate File 119. With that, Mr. Speaker, I move, and then
I would like to go until we finish Senate File 137. At Senate File 137, I'd like to move to Rise and Report. With that, Mr. Speaker, I move that the House stand in recess until 2 p.m.
Heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. Nobody wants to go to lunch? There you go. All those opposed, no. The House will stand in recess until 2 p.m.